Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus. And you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. This is the final episode of 2020, and I've got a couple of grievances that I've had from the past year that I've never got to talk about because of one thing or another. In this edition, you'll hear me rant about Wild Eye releasing using DVD-Rs. I hate when that happens, seriously, when companies who have distribution deals all of a sudden need to use DVD-Rs or these made-on-demand discs. As Wild Eye releasing is being distributed by MVD, they've also handled various other labels like Full Moon, Troma, and other labels. I will be talking about that. I will also be bringing Dumb House Productions back, as I really need to share a video on how to make your horror villain effective and scary. Because as I've recently saw a couple of really bad villains that I need to get off my chest. I'm sorry, but you need to make an effective horror villain in order for the film to be very good. I'll talk more about that in that segment. I'll be interviewing actress Emily Sweet to talk about her latest film, Castle Freak, which is available on Shudder in VOD. And finally, in What's Anthony T Watching, the most talked about topic on the podcast, has a film out that made me pay $19.99 to see a film starring Vince Vaughn. Yes, Vince Vaughn. I love Vince Vaughn. I'm sorry. I'll be talking about his latest film in What's Anthony T Watching. But first, the news. But since we are on the topic of Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions, as I really need to talk about this upcoming reboot sequel. I guess it's a sequel. It looks like a sequel. It might be a reboot. I'm not sure. But rumor has it Blumhouse Pictures may be jumping on board to produce another Exorcist film, which is going to be made by Morgan Creek Entertainment. And the rumored director for this film is David Gordon Green. Yes, the same David Gordon Green that rebooted the Halloween franchise. Now, I don't know what to think about this. Seriously. I saw the original Exorcist this year for the first time. Remember when I admitted on this podcast that I've never seen The Exorcist? I made that correction in October and saw the film. I thought it was a good film. Little too long, because that felt like 2 hours. But hearing the news that they want to do another Exorcist film, why? Please, Morgan Creek Entertainment, why? Every time an Exorcist film comes out, it's never a good thing anymore. Look at The Exorcist Part 3. That was a horrible film. It was so confusing, so boring, and not really interesting. And that felt like two and a half hours long. I didn't even bother with the prequels because, well, I don't want to spend my time watching the prequels considering all the fiasco that went behind the scenes on the prequels, because there are two cuts to Dominion, the prequel to The Exorcist. So, I didn't bother seeing it because, well, if they're fighting over cuts of the film, it's probably not good. So I avoided that film. No plans to see that film at all, or the other cut. None whatsoever. Back to the new Exorcist film that's supposed to come out. Allegedly, according to an article on The Observer, they quoted saying that the project is a sequel, not a reboot. Even though it sounds like a reboot, I would not be surprised if it felt like a reboot. Because any horror property these days usually ends up in a reboot. Look at Halloween. Look at Friday the 13th. Look at Nightmare on Elm Street. They all had reboots. Only the Halloween film was successful. But still, that's way too long between sequels. From The Exorcist Part 3 to 4. So, I don't understand why they're doing a sequel 20 some odd years after The Exorcist Part 3 came out. It's just mind-boggling. Seriously. We're going to do a sequel 20 years later. First of all, that usually is never good. The only rare exception, probably, is Twin Peaks The Return. That's an excellent miniseries. And it was kind of a sequel from the original Twin Peaks. But usually sequels after like 10, 20 years usually loses its luster, and I don't think it's a good idea that even touching The Exorcist, let alone do a fourth film to the original film. It's like, it's ridiculous. Seriously. But what do I know? I am not a Hollywood big shot. I guess we need a Exorcist sequel 20 plus years after the third film, because it's going to be a total different story, probably, without any of the characters from the first three films. So, why bother do a sequel to The Exorcist? Seriously. I don't know how it's going to work. Seriously. It could be great. Because David Gordon Green could direct it. I'm citing could because it's not official. He's in talks right now. But I just don't think it's a good idea to do another Exorcist film. That ship sailed a long time ago. I don't know how they're going to be able to pull off a good film when you're probably going to need all new characters. From talks of a sequel to one of the most anticipated remakes I've been wanting to see. Because, well, it's been that long since we've gotten news on it. It's been so long that I was starting to think that the Toxic Avenger would not be able to escape development hell. But there is finally some news after a very long time. It's been a very long since the Toxic Avenger had some news. And it's big news! Seriously! I thought I'd never hear another article on the remake of the Toxic Avenger, but here it is. According to Deadline, the Toxic Avenger is set to star Peter Dinklage. Yes, the same actor who is in such high-profile projects such as Avengers Infinity War, X-Men Days of Future Past, and most recently Game of Thrones. So this is major news. Seriously. We don't know what character he's going to play, but I really think this was a good casting decision if this turned out to be true. As it does say, Peter Dinklage to star in Legendary's Toxic Avenger reboot. So, it's most likely going to happen. But at least we're getting some news on this project. And if this is true, this is a big thing for this project. And so, give it some credibility for pop culture fans. I'm looking forward to this no matter what. Because I'm a fan of Trauma, and I really would love to see a new Toxic Avenger film. Seriously. I know it's probably not going to be like the first four films in the Toxic Avenger series, as everything will probably need to be toned down for this reboot. But it's a very interesting that they went to Peter Dinklage to star in this film. Because personally, I wouldn't think this would be his type of film. Unless it was going to be a big budget film, which could happen. It seriously could happen because Legendary Pictures is behind this reboot. So, I really hope that this reboot succeeds. Because, if anything, I would like Troma to succeed. And by rebooting the Toxic Avenger, I know they had a reboot of Mother's Day about 10 years ago, which was very good, from Darren Lynn Brosman. And Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Hertz are executive producers for this film. I hope it's just not name only, but I got a feeling it's probably just name only since they're giving them the rights to make the film. But still, I would like this film to succeed because we need studios like Troma to keep making money because we need these indie horror studios to thrive in order for the independent horror scene to continue to move along. And speaking of Legendary Entertainment, it looks like they may be headed to court. As you guessed it, they're not cool with Warner Brothers putting Godzilla vs. Kong and Dune on HBO Max. I told you last episode, this is a bad idea and a very dumb one. Because for my reasons, it was the theaters. But now you have a studio involved. You have the Directors Guild talking boycott of Warner Brothers over this. And actors are not happy with this. Because some actors actually take a percentage of the box office when they sign on to do a film. It's hard to take a percentage of the box office when the film is on streaming for free, pretty much. Or $14.99 a month, which nets the actors who signed on to a film in order for a percentage of the box office take next to nothing. And this is a very big problem. This problem will probably go into 2021. As you got Legendary Entertainment talking lawsuit. As this is the thing here. Legendary Entertainment put up money for Godzilla vs. Kong and Dune. It's hard to make money if a film is on a streaming service. Now, if they sold the film to, say, Netflix or something, then probably the production company would get half of the sale. But since Warner Brothers is giving it to HBO Max, which both Warner Brothers and HBO Max are owned by the same company, you're not going to make any money. This is the thing. HBO Max tried to go big, and they tried to make it a point that they want their streaming service up in the top echelon with Netflix and Amazon Prime. This is a very bad situation here because you have a threat of lawsuit now. If Legendary Entertainment sues Warner Brothers, you can expect Godzilla vs. Kong and Dune possibly delayed longer than its original release dates on HBO Max because this may take a while. Knowing lawsuits, it can be messy. Meaning, it could be very possible that Godzilla vs. Kong and Dune won't air this year. You won't see those films this year. This whole mess has to do with Warner Brothers thinking that the theaters aren't going to recover in 2021. And it's really going to be a very interesting news story in 2021. If Legendary Entertainment goes ahead with that lawsuit. Because I can tell you right now, we may not see Godzilla vs. Kong or Dune next year. As that will probably be sitting on the shelf while they're in court. And that's not a good thing. For whether you're for or against Warner Brothers putting the entire slate on HBO Max. It's going to be a very interesting story to follow. Stay tuned. And with that, that's the news.
Thank you. Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. A weekly podcast where the discussion is about the most recent horror and genre films. Intelligent talk on a genre that deserves intelligence. A conversation between co-hosts discussing not only the film, but also the connotation that the directors and screenwriters are trying to articulate. If you want more than a review, listen to Dark Discussions.
And speaking of perception, there's just one more scene I want to talk about, which is after Caleb discovers that Kyoto's a robot, Kyoto kind of peels off her skin, showing him what's underneath.
Now, wait a minute. I know where you're going with this, but tell me you weren't already thinking this 15 minutes earlier in the film. Exactly what he's thinking at that moment.
Which is he's a robot, too.
Oh, I considered the possibility.
Right, and that's what I like, is the fact that the writers were smart enough to know that this is what the audience would be thinking.
We've all seen Blade Runner.
Right. Exactly.
www.darkdiscussions.com, wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. Now, I have a couple of gripes from this past year that I want to get off my chest. I have been waiting to get off my chest, but I haven't had time for one reason or another, whether it's having episodes with two guests or topics like Jason Blum needing the attention of the podcast. So I am now going to get to those rants that I wanted to get to. And this first one, I kind of teased back in episode 51. I was going to get to that, but because of Jason Blum, that never happened. Because I was talking about Wild Eye releasing and how I am not happy with him. Now, before I go into the story, last year on my YouTube channel, I filmed a video chastising the Asylum for using a DVD-R for The Sixth Friend, where the Asylum decided, well, we're not going to waste a lot of money replicating professional discs for The Sixth Friend, even though we are the home of the Sharknado franchise. So we'll just throw it on some DVD-R and hope someone did not notice. Well, it has happened again to me. Back in July of this year, I purchased a couple films from Amazon, Pots Unknown and Creature Cabin, both good films, which people should check out. But again, the major problem I have here is these films are on DVD-Rs, and Wild Eye Releasing usually releases their films on professional DVDs. Back in the video on Anthony T's Horror Show's YouTube channel, I showed you that both of these films are on DVD-Rs and not professional DVDs. If you go to Amazon.com, it will say it'll take 5 to 6 weeks for the product to be done. That's because it's made on demand. And it's okay if it's like a minor indie studio to have your film on a DVD-R. I have no problem with minor studios who don't have any source of distribution to put their film on a DVD-R or BDR. But when a major indie company who has a distribution contract with Music Video Distribution puts out DVD-Rs of films that should be on a professional DVD, but it isn't because either the studio didn't want to put these films on a professional DVD, or maybe something has to do with the content because it's too gory or something. But Wild Eye Releasing has a extreme label. So I don't know why in the hell Creature Cabin or Pots Unknown ain't on a professional DVD. This is 2020, ladies and gentlemen. Was this a call on Wild Eye Releasing's part? Or maybe the distributor refused to distribute the films. That could have been another possibility too. But still, it's shameful that these two films are on DVD-Rs when you have a company like Wild Eye Releasing that has a major distribution contract? It is ridiculous, first of all, because personally, there's no reason these two films should be on DVD-Rs. There is no reason. Seriously, it is a disgrace that these two films are on DVD-Rs and everything else on Wild Eye Releasing's library is on a professional DVD. I don't get these indie studios. DVD-Rs are meant to be used by mostly studios that can't afford distribution. But Wild Eye Releasing is being distributed by a major distribution company. And that is ridiculous. Seriously. Even Scream Team Releasing uses professional Blu-rays. I don't get why Wild Eye Releasing can't use professional DVDs for those two releases. It comes off as cheap. It comes off like they're Uncorked Entertainment where Uncorked Entertainment just usually uses DVD-Rs for their releases, which I don't know why, because they are a good label. They should be getting some sort of distribution from Music Video Distribution or someone. But I don't know why Uncorked Entertainment uses DVD-Rs all the time. That one I cannot figure out. But back to what I'm saying with Wild Eye Releasing. There is no excuse for Wild Eye Releasing to use DVD-Rs for their films. I am a DVD collector. I like my films coming out on a professional DVD replicator with a professional DVD, not some DVD-R. I can seriously understand all the small indie companies that can't get distribution and that's the only way they can get their product out. I can understand that. But for Wild Eye Releasing to use DVD-Rs for Creature Cabin and Parts Unknown is ridiculous. A, you have to wait about 3, 4, 5 weeks before you get the film. And B, it's just lazy. Pure lazy. When you have a distribution deal with Music Video Distribution. I hate it when companies do this. Seriously. They have the tools to put these films on a professional DVD, but they don't. And every time someone does that, and I find out, guess what? I'm going to complain about it because it is not right for those films who are on a major indie label to be tossed aside and just given a DVD-R release. It is ridiculous. It is shameful to the filmmakers who sell you the film for you to release. What, you couldn't get these films into stores? Was that the major reason? Was it the distribution? I don't know what it is. But it is shameful that those two films got a DVD-R release by a major indie horror label. It's sad. Seriously, it's just downright sad that these films get shafted to DVD-R status when they sign a deal with a major indie horror label. It's sad. Seriously. It's not right to the filmmakers at all. And is not right to the consumer. Every day there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer. And they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I'm the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well, then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John! Now for something new and improved!
Welcome back. Now, this is something I have not gotten to that I've been wanting to get to for like maybe the last month or so, and it is called Bad Horror Villains. As it's like, in a month's time, I have seen two of the worst horror slash thriller villains that I've seen in quite a long time. First, Becky, where the villain, Kevin James, just whispers through almost this whole film, which was so annoying and not so menacing. Seriously. This is like one of the worst performances that I've seen all year, and I will be talking more about Kevin James at the yearly award show in January called the Horror Whammies, because that performance was flat out lifeless and horrible. Seriously, Kevin James should be nowhere near a set. He should just go back to playing a mall cop. That's it. I don't want to see him anything. And he's not even good as a mall cop neither. And there was another villain that I was so annoyed with. And this was during the last drive-in Halloween Hootenanny, where they showed the film Hack-O-Lantern. That film was horrible. What made it even more horrible, the film's villain. He just comes off as so whiny. I am the bad guy. And then again, nothing worked in that film, but that villain was annoying, not frightening. So guess what? You guessed it. It is the return of Dumbhouse Pictures, as they have recently created their first epic instructional video ever since last year, when they had an instructional video called How to Make a Perfect Trailer, or something along the lines of that. But it dealt with how to make a trailer that doesn't give away the whole film. This instructional video here is about how to make your villain menacing and not whining or whispering. Roll the footage, for better or worse.
Johnny! Ever wonder how to make a horror villain menacing? I'll tell you right here in How to Make Your Horror Film's Villain Menacing. First, make sure you create a villain that the viewer is going to fear. You do that by making sure your villain acts in the ways that you would be so afraid of him. Johnny, why does your villain smile and act funny? As I can see that on your screenplay. You cannot fear a narcissistic villain that cracks jokes, because you will be rooting for the villain. And it defeats the purpose of your story. Johnny, why is your villain cracking jokes as he's acting like a comedian? You really need to pay attention, Johnny. Please. I am trying to help you make the scariest film possible. Second, make sure the villain is talking in a clear voice. Your main villain needs to be talking in a voice where all darkness is consuming him and you fear him. Make sure he shows no emotion and he is angry. It is very important to do that, as you need the villain to be feared by the viewer. If he doesn't do that, then the viewer will never be scared of the villain. Johnny, Why do you have your main villain talking like he's whispering? I can see it in those notes. I will not be able to hear him. All right, I'll get him to speak louder. And finally, make sure his movement is intense. An effective horror villain is when the movement of the villain scares you. He makes you fear him. When your villain is moving at an intense pace, the viewer will fear the villain, and your villain may become iconic. Johnny, why is your villain walking like a zombie? Thank you for letting him move a little more faster. That was all the steps to making a very efficient and scary horror villain. Why the
bleep
is Kevin James on the set of this film? He is the worst actor ever, and nobody fears a mall cop! Johnny, you mother!
Thank you for watching.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
This is Carrie.
This is Billy.
This is Mr. Bo.
And we are from A Podcast from Beneath. You can catch us every Wednesday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I am here with actress Emily Sweet, who's in the new horror film Castle Freak, which is the remake of the Full Moon classic, which is on VOD and Shudder. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm so well, thank you. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
What made you want to become an actor?
Oh, well, honestly, it's the only thing I've wanted to do since I was a little kid. And there are points in my life when I was like, well, maybe I should try to think of something else to do. But anytime I did any other type of job, I just wasn't fulfilled. So I made the decision in more than a couple years ago, I guess, at this point, but just really decided that I needed to go for it, and it was now or never. So it's just something that I've always wanted to do.
When doing a little research, I also found out you're a writer and producer. What drew you to those aspects besides acting?
I think that it's good to know all aspects of the industry, and thankfully, I have very talented friends, and so we decided that we wanted to make our own horror shorts. So I guess I just figured I have stories to tell, might as well tell them. And I know what I wanted as far, me and my producing partner, we knew what we wanted, and so we just decided to go for it.
You're one of the stars in the remake of Full Moon Features' most popular films, Castle Freak. Tell everyone about the film and your character.
So the original, you know, takes place in Italy. It's a family who inherits a castle, and there is a freak that lives in the castle and kind of terrorizes this family. And so for ours, the reimagining, as we're calling it, because what I love so much about this one is it has a lot of nods to the original. However, it's still its own movie. If you had never seen the original Castle Freak, you could watch this as a standalone, which I think is really great. And so it's similar premise. Instead of a family inheriting a castle, it's this woman, and she and her boyfriend go, and then their friends come out, and there is still a freak, and all hell breaks loose. So it's similar, but it has a lot more of Lovecraftian themes to it, which I think is really great. And my character, Shelley, I always say that she's misunderstood. If you watch, a lot of people think that I'm not necessarily a good person in this movie, which is fair. But I am part of the friend group that goes to help the characters, John and Rebecca, kind of sort through the castle. And my main motivation is I've been in love with John for years. And in my story that I worked with alongside with Tate when we were kind of developing my character, we had decided that Shelley and John were together whenever it was. Along the way, we were together at some point, but John ended up with Rebecca. So my main point, I suppose, in going to this castle is to try to get with John, whom I love.
What drew you to the role of Shelley?
Well, I love the original Castle Freak. So they could have given me, I could have been a butler, not that there's a butler in the movie, but I could have been given that role and have been thrilled with it. So Shelley is a new character. You know, she wasn't in the original. And I just, I liked that. I tried to make, you know, Shelley more than just a one-dimensional character. You know, here she is. She's pining for someone. She loves someone whom she can't have. And I wanted to take a character that seems so tropey on, in the books, you know, on paper, it looks so tropey, and make her something a little more two-dimensional.
What was it about the original Castle Freak that you liked?
I think that it just really went places that you didn't see. I mean, it's 95, so it's not like it's that old, but still, I think for 1995, they showed things that I had never seen before. They just went places, and I really applaud them for that. I think it's an interesting story. And Giorgio, you know, the freak Giorgio in the original, I think I kind of felt bad for him. You know, of course he's not a great person. You know, he's killed people and things, but also I think misunderstood. I thought it, you know, I love Barbara Crampton. I love Jeffrey Combs. Those two acting in anything I think is great. It's just a really fun movie, the original.
One of the film's executive producers is Barbara Crampton. How much was she involved on the film, on set?
On set? She was there every day. She would help us with our characters. You know, before we would start rolling, she would bring us aside and kind of talk us through, along with Tate, the director, who's incredible. She was very involved. She helped us, like I said, before every scene, kind of talk it through. And after a take or two, you know, she would pull us aside and be like, okay, well, maybe we'll try it this way, this time this way. She was great. She is the most loveliest person you'll ever meet.
What was the auditioning process like?
So my agent reached out and said that he had this role for me to audition for, which when I knew it was Castle Freak, I was ecstatic. And honestly, it was pretty quick. I don't know at what point I came along in their casting process, but I auditioned, and then, I'm trying to remember, maybe a week or so after, my agent called me and said, I hope your passport isn't expired because you're going to Albania. So it was very quick for me. I did a self-tape, and that was that.
The film is directed by special effects artists Tate Steinsett, who some people might know from the fifth and first seasons of Face Off. Did you know he was on Face Off before you worked on this film?
I did. But because I just researched, I don't know if I've ever watched Face Off before, but I did know upon research that he was this incredible, amazing, super talented effects artist. And as you can tell by watching the movie, they're not wrong. He's amazing. So I only knew that after I did some research.
What was it like working with him?
Oh, he's fantastic. He's the best. Tate is such a loving, caring human that, and he's so passionate about what he does. And he was so passionate about this movie that, I mean, he talked to us beforehand, talked to us on the phone before we got out to Albania. When you meet Tate, you feel like you've known him forever. And I think, you know, he knows what he wants, and it's a breeze working with him. I would love to work with him again. He's fantastic.
How much input did Tate allow you in the way that you approached your character in your performance?
Oh my gosh. He knew what he wanted from Shelley, but he gave me all the reins to do, you know, if I wanted to ad-lib something, I could ad-lib something. If I had an idea, you know, I could go up to him and talk to him about it, and he'd be so open to it. And, you know, we would work it in a way where it just made sense for the movie. So, yeah, I had a lot of input with Shelley, which I think is, you know, really great. It's fine if if this is a character and this is what you're playing, that's fine. I've done that before, and that's great. That's my job. But it is really nice when you are able to give input about the character. It makes it a lot easier.
The film has a good cast, as well as it includes Claire Catherine, Jake Horowitz, and Chris Gallist. What was it like working with each of them on this film?
They are all so talented. Oh my goodness. So talented. Work with them that often, unfortunately. I wish I had, you know, 20 more scenes with them, just because they're fascinating to watch and to work with. They're fantastic. I worked with Jake the most, and he's so lovely. They're all just so lovely. They're lovely people. You know, we still keep in touch. They're great. I love watching how other people approach their roles. And I thought all three of them did great, especially Claire, who this was her first movie, her first like big movie that she's done. And oh my gosh, I thought she did such an incredible job. So it was great. I love them.
Speaking of the chemistry, did you have any rehearsal time before heading to or in Albania?
We had a couple of table reads. And then I know we were able to, before a scene, kind of rehearse with ourselves. And, you know, we would walk through and we would block everything. But we did have one giant table read with everybody. And then we had a couple of other ones with just like the core. I don't want to say core cast because everyone in that movie is super important. But the friend group. That friend group, we had some table reads with ourselves. So, yeah, and, you know, we could always ask Tate questions, and he was always around. So, yeah, we had some time.
What was the atmosphere like on set, given the fact that you're far away from the West Coast?
Well, I love being on location. I think that's one of the greatest things about my job is that, you know, you can, at any moment, you could be somewhere. Like, did I ever think that I would be in Albania? Absolutely not. So, you know, it's fine. You kind of over the years just get not used to traveling, but you kind of get used to it. But it's exciting, I think. It's super exciting to be able to go to these places. And so, you know, you form your little family when you're over there. And it was great. It wasn't hard. You know, if you have pets, you miss your pets and stuff. But the experience, you know, outweighs everything. So it was great. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
What was it like shooting the film there?
Beautiful. It was so beautiful. And, you know, the Albanian culture, oh gosh, I loved it. I loved being able to walk around, you know, the streets and just get to, I don't know, we met so many great people and went to so many great shops and restaurants and businesses and just met so many wonderful people. And just filming in that castle alone, I mean, it was from the 3rd century. Who gets to say that? You know, it was such an amazing experience. And that castle, yet though it can be very creepy at, you know, at night in the dark, it was just so stunningly beautiful.
What was the film crew like in Albania compared to an American film crew?
Honestly, not very different. That's a great question. Not very different. I know it's funny because sometimes the language barrier could be an issue, but I don't even want to say issue because look at what we made. You know, it was seamless in my opinion, but it was funny kind of, you know, at first you're like, wait, what? Oh gosh, wait, I don't understand. Wait, say that again. Hang on. But then, you know, after being there for a month or whatever, you learn and know that crew was, oh my gosh, Spiro, the DP, I mean, oh gosh, his shots were incredible. I think everyone there also was just so talented. They're really, the only main difference was that sometimes there was just a little bit of a language barrier.
Now, this film is shot in a castle. Tell me about the location, as most of this film was shot over there.
Yeah, I mean, it was just beautiful. I mean, at the very opening scene when we're having the party, which is supposed to be in, you know, Massachusetts, we were still in Albania at that point, and we filmed in like the old emperor's tomb, which they were moving him somewhere or doing something, and so they were tearing down that facility a couple weeks later. And so we were the only film crew that was able to film there the whole time that I was present, which that was a very cool, creepy place. But the castle, I mean, it was just beautiful and just so big, sprawling. It just went on forever. You could so easily get lost. But just the architecture of it, I mean, it was something that I had never, ever seen in my life. It was gorgeous.
What was it like shooting inside the castle with all the cameras and lighting rigs there?
I mean, it was no different than, I think, shooting anything else. You know, in any other movie, you always have the, you know, the rigs and the lights and people around you, which I think is part of, I think that's an interesting thing about acting is, you know, a viewer, you could be having this super intimate scene, but 2 inches, you know, from your left earlobe is a microphone or is a director, is, you know, is someone or someone who's making this movie. But I mean, it was no different really than anything else.
What was it like shooting outside in the town near the castle?
That town was, oh my gosh, I love that town. It was so unique and so interesting. And I know Eli, who played Chuck, he and I had a lot of time off together. And so he and I would just roam the streets and meet people and go into the shops and look around and, you know, buy things to take home with us. It was so cool. Just, gosh, it was so beautiful. And everyone there, I mean, I think I've said this before, but everyone there is just so nice and so friendly and welcoming. And, you know, they come look at our shops, come look what we have, and oh, it was great.
What was your favorite moment on the set of the film?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one. I really enjoyed when the friend group was together, just because I love those guys so much that I feel like when we were together, we could play off of each other a lot. And I just think that those scenes stand out. I think they're a lot of fun, just, you know, us palling around and making jokes. And I would say that was my favorite, was when we were all together as a group.
Would you consider shooting another film outside the States if the opportunity rose?
I would, in a heartbeat. I would love to shoot outside of the States again. I think that's a huge perk of the job, is that sometimes you are able to do that or just go to any location. Yeah, I would, 100%, I would do it again.
Do you have any upcoming films on the horizon, either in production or ready for release?
I do. Yes, I do have some. I can't say much about them yet, but I have a thriller that's going to come to TV this summer. Again, can't really say too much about it. And then I do have, in a couple of months, COVID pending, I'll be filming out in Portland. And so that's what I have so far.
Where can they find you on social media?
So I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram, and it's the same handle for both. It's at It's Emily Sweet. So ItsEmilySweet.
Emily, I want to thank you for coming on to the podcast. Have a good day and stay safe.
Thank you, you too.
Don't forget, you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on social media, over on Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher app at Anthony T's Horror Show, on Twitter at Anthony T's Horror. If you liked this episode, you can subscribe to Anthony T's Horror Show over on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. You can also catch Anthony T's Horror Show over on StockDiscussions.com, where you can find my podcast and other podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. What's Anthony T watching? I could have gone a number of ways here in this segment. I could have talked about Harrison Smith's new film, The Special. I could have talked about an interesting indie horror film that just came out on Blu-ray called The Wolf of Snow Hollow. I could have seen Brandon Cronenberg's latest film, Possessor. I've been really wanting to see that film. But I decided, for better or worse, to talk about a film produced by the most talked about topic on the podcast. I think you know where I'm going here. Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions, as they recently released a new film on VOD called Freaky. Well, this film played in theaters, but now it's on VOD. And I told you that was probably going to end up on VOD, but it did hit theaters first. And I really wanted to see this film so bad. I even talked about it on this podcast that I wanted to see this film so bad because it stars none other than Vince Vaughn. Yes, the Vince Vaughn. That was in all these great 90s, early 2000 comedies like Wedding Crashers, Old School, Swingers. I was really sold on this film from the trailer and the fact that we were getting classic Vince Vaughn. And did we ever get classic Vince Vaughn in this film? As he was great in this film. I really loved Vince Vaughn in this film. And I'm a huge Vince Vaughn fan. I love all of his comedic stuff. And he does a really great job with his character here. As he's very funny. He balances the funny aspects and the psycho aspects of the character very well. Because he's playing two different characters here. Let's face it. And he does a really good job at playing both of them. As I really think this is one of his best films in years. Seriously, I love Vince Vaughn. This is classic Vince Vaughn. You got Vince Vaughn from The Cell, and you got Vince Vaughn from Wedding Crashers, both in the same film. And yes, Vince Vaughn can do dramatic roles too. He's so versatile. He's just a great actor. But I also really thought the direction was very good here, as Christopher Landon does a very good job with the way he keeps the action moving and the way he really directs the performances. I would even go to say this is probably his best directing job out of his filmography, which includes the two Happy Death Day films, Paranormal Activity, The Mocked Ones, which is a very underrated film in that franchise. He's a very good director, and I really think he does a very good job here. He also has a very good screenplay as well, as he, along with Michael Kennedy, do a very good job keeping everything moving. One of the things that I liked very well was the way that the writers came up with some of the kill scenes in this film. I thought some of the kill scenes in this film were very creative. It is something that you need in a horror film. And it really helped that this film was R-rated, because it allowed them to do more than what they could with the Happy Death Day films, as they were both PG-13. But those films, you're limited in the way you can create the death scenes and create the gore scenes. This film's just crazy. It just has a couple of crazy death scenes in this film. I like how the fact that they don't hold back here, and that's really one of the credits to this film, as this could have been another Happy Death Day type of film, but it isn't, because it's allowed to be, first of all, an R-rated film, plus the fact that the action is packed, and it's done in a way that it really keeps you interested. I also like how the screenplay does a very good job developing the main character of the film, as whether she's in her own body or the killer's body, they do a great job focusing on the character and giving you a reason to care about the character, which really helped make the story of this film work as a whole. And the other thing that I really liked was the lead performance in this film, as Catherine Newton does a very good job playing the lead character, Millie. Going into this film, I thought it was just going to be a D. Vince Vaughn show, but I thought Catherine Newton did a very good job with her character, as she does a good job keeping up with Vince Vaughn's performance, as the two really had opposite performances, both from the beginning towards the middle. I liked how she's able to adapt to the action that is going on in the screenplay, because you have to be like the villain that Vince Vaughn is playing. And when you have one of these films where you're just body swapping, it can be tough for the character to change notes. And I think both of them did a very good job with their characters here, as it really helped this film a lot. And it's a little known fact about Catherine Newton. She also starred in Paranormal Activity 4. Remember who produced that film? Yes, Jason Blum. Without the Paranormal Activity franchise, we would have no Jason Blum. Seriously. So I want to make a quick note of that, that they both worked together before. Here's the thing. I wonder if Jason Blum, given the fact that she was in a lead role in Paranormal Activity 4, was given the lead here. Because if that was the case, then it's another very good casting job from Jason Blum. Because we all know The Invisible Man, and we all know how Elizabeth Moss had the lead role in that film. It was because of Jason Blum. I wonder if Jason Blum did this purposely, or was there an audition? But still, I'm just interested, seriously, because I really think she did a great job. I can see why Catherine Newton recently was announced to be Cassie Lang in the new upcoming Ant-Man film, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, because she really does a great job in this film, and I really wonder if that film had something to do with her getting that role, because she handled the action scenes very well, and it makes you wonder if that was a direct result of this film. But anyway, back to Freaky. This is a great film. Definitely check this out. It is funny. It has great performances from Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton. Check it out on VOD. It's worth the $20. Definitely. I hate to say this, but it was worth the $20 that I paid to rent this film. Check this film out. It is very fun. You will have a great time. for your $20. Guaranteed. Next episode of Anthony T's Horror Show, I will be looking back at the year 2020 in a two-part special. So that means episode 57 and episode 58 are the best of 2020 episodes. Episode 57 is the episode where I give out my awards. It's more like an award-style show. First, the horror whammies. They're more like the Razzies, going after the worst in horror in 2020. Then after that, I'll be doing the Anthony T. Horror Show Awards, citing some of the best stuff in 2020. Then in episode 58, it will be my top 10 films of 2020. I will have a guest on, most likely. So we'll be talking about our favorite 2020 films. I don't know who the guest is yet, so to be determined with that. Between episodes, I am going to try to do a Black Friday video on Anthony T's Horror YouTube channel. The only reason why I have not done a Black Friday video yet is I haven't gotten everything that I picked up on Black Friday. And it's pretty much Christmas, and I don't have everything from Black Friday yet. So it's taking a while to get this video even shot, because I want everything in order before I have shoot the video. So I'm hoping between episodes that happens. Knowing my luck, it'll probably be sometime mid-January, the way everything's been going lately. So keep an eye on Anthony T's Horror Show on Facebook, Twitter, Slasher app, to see it when this video comes out, because I have no idea when this video is coming out, because I haven't got my Black Friday stuff yet. With that, I want to thank you for listening to this episode. Stay safe, support indie horror, and I'll see you in 2021.